All right, go ahead.
Okay. Call to order at 6:31 on March 16th, 2021. Everyone stand or sit for the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, liberty, and justice for all. So roll call, let it be noted that Commissioner Huggins is the only member not here. Commissioner Freiberger, Penno, Maddox, Burnett, Johnson, and Fattisi are present. So has everyone had the opportunity to take a look at the meeting minutes from our prior meeting on February 16th?
Yes.
Comments?
I wished I would have printed it because there were two words missing and I don't have it in front of me to tell you which two they are.
That's okay. Danielle's probably got us on that one.
Yeah.
Joe, on what particular sections?
About the third paragraph down, close three quarters of the way through.
Okay. Is there something you want to add to it or?
Not me, just.
Okay.
Pointing it out.
So at this point, since everyone has had the opportunity, is there a motion to approve?
I'll approve the minute says.
Okay, printed. We have a motion to approve by Commissioner Penno. Do I have a second? I have a second from Commissioner Maddox. The minutes from February 16, 2021 are approved. So let's move on to the general public comments section, and we will open that up at 6:33. And at this point, Catherine, has anyone sent you any emails or anything in general that somebody had a question or had a comment on?
I have not received any.
Okay, we will now close the general public comments section at 6:34. So let's move on to the public hearing. So Catherine, why don't you start that off before I open it to give anyone that is dialed in a little bit of a background on it.
There are nobody here. There's
it's
nobody.
It's just us today.
No. Okay.
And so, yeah, as you all know, we've been working on the Shoreline Master Program update for 2020-2021. That's due in June 30th, 2021. And we are on track now. We have, you know, I would say compiled our public comments, but we didn't get any comments. So, but we're, it's a pretty small, comparatively small update. It's just bringing the S&P into, making sure it's compliant and remains so with current cost thresholds and other stuff. So that is on track. And so today is our last meeting with the Planning Commission / Citizens Advisory Committee. And so this is our last chance to have any comments or recommendations for the Shoreline Master Program before we send it off to the City Council to recommend it be adopted.
Okay, so as a matter of procedure, I'm going to open up the public hearing at 6:35. So again, let's reiterate, is anyone out there in the public that would like to comment? And have we received, just as a formal recording, any comments regarding the proposed updates to the Shoreline Master Program?
So I know this is the public comment portion, but we did receive one comment from WashDOT that just was someone kind of mentioning that they didn't see any WashDOT information show up in the update and just kind of, you know, letting us know and wondering if that was something that we would want to consider or know about. And
do you want to read that exact comment into the record?
I don't have it in front of me.
Okay. So John, do you think that that's sufficient?
It's not necessary. They submitted written comments and responded. We've let them know that we received it. It doesn't need to be in the oral.
Okay.
I just wanted to put it out there. We received one comment.
I will close the public hearing portion of the Shoreline Master Program at 6:36. So moving on, does anybody have any additional comments on the document that was included in our package regarding the Shoreline Master Program? Okay, unfinished business, our favorite. Electronic reader boards. So proposed amendments to the city regulations for electronic reader boards in the Central Business District, which from what I can also understand from the materials, we're going to revisit all of our sign code from what I believe, right? 17, Title 17, no. 40?
No, not at all.
So 1740 was because it looked like
Can I stop you real quick? I think you need to make a motion to recommend the S&P to City Council.
Okay.
That needs to happen before we move on.
Thank you very much. So is there a motion to accept the proposed amendments to the Shoreline Master Program as has been presented?
I'll make a motion that the City Council adopt the draft changes to the Shoreline Master Plan and Appendix C to the Shoreline Master Plan and forward the draft revisions to the Department of Ecology for review for final approval.
Thank you, Commissioner Maddox, and I will not repeat that entire sentence. Do I have a second?
We'll second that.
Okay, we have a second from Commissioner Freiberger. So I think that should satisfy those requirements at this time. Is that correct? Okay.
Well, you need to vote on it.
Yeah, we need to have a vote.
Sorry, I apologize. This is, I'm getting there. So all in favor, aye?
Aye.
All opposed, no? So we have a full approval of four members. For approval, so it's adopted to move on.
That's 6-0.
We're missing Commissioner Huggins. So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and I don't think I.
You count.
Okay.
You're not the mayor. You are part of the you might be thinking about it as like in the, with the mayor. The mayor doesn't vote unless there's a tiebreaker. But in the Planning Commission, you're all members and the chair is not a non-voting member. The chair votes also.
For some reason, I was confused that my vote was on the tiebreaker. And again, you know, I'm getting better at this. So I also vote to approve. So we have a 6-0. Okay. Yes. So now we are moving on to unfinished business. Proposed amendments to the city regulations for electronic reader boards in the Central Business District. Now, John, before we start, why am I confused on that?
So this started out as looking at reader boards in the Central Business District, should they be allowed or not? And as we progressed with that, the Planning Commission obviously felt there was it was a good idea to allow them under very strict circumstances. So we had to write code specifically for how the electronic reader boards would be allowed in the Central Business District. So while we're doing that, we're also going to create rules for electronic reader boards throughout the entire city. They're already allowed throughout the entire city. We're just beefing up our sign code to have a specific section to address, well, what I call digital signs now instead of electronic reader boards, and I can get into that, why the name change in a bit. So the way this is drafted is we have regulations for digital signs in the city as a whole, and then specific requirements for the Central Business District and the public zone. Mm-hmm. So that's why there's sort of two tiers. So we're just creating a new section in the sign code, as well as making changes to very minor changes to the design regulations to specify. That's at the very end of the written memo part, where it just used to say that flashing, animated, rotating, changing message boards and signs that combine white background with internal illumination are specifically prohibited, and that's for the Central Business District. I've changed it to say, except as allowed in Chapter 1740, Cedaroli Municipal Code, flashing, animated, rotated, changing message signs, are prohibited. Mm-hmm. So that directs you back to the sign code to specifically see how to handle electronic reader boards and message boards in the city, in the Central Business District. So I'll get into my little spiel here. The Planning Commission previously said, yes, let's look at allowing them in the Central Business District. And so I created rules based on what I think I heard the Planning Commission say. I think it did a good job, but if I missed on anything or if there's something lacking, this is a great opportunity for us to refine, because I was creating a code out of thin air. So I didn't want it to be expected that this was going to be perfect on the first try. So this is my best crack at it. And in addition to that, the Planning Commission had also worked on locations in the Central Business District where signs should be allowed, digital signs can be allowed. That there was hardly any matching roads in your maps. No two Planning Commission members were even remotely similar in their mapping. Except for nobody thought it was a good idea to allow it on Metcalf Street. So there, we're good there. So what I did is I kind of took a shot in the dark, trying to mix together what the Planning Commission had said and just, you know, what I've heard and kind of my own opinion too, I guess. And that map is shown on the very last page of the memo. And what it is instead of saying where it's not allowed, we're saying the digital signs are not allowed in the Central Business District except on these five or six streets. And that makes it a lot easier to understand for people that are trying to read this. And it excludes all of the roads in the Central Business District that are primarily residential roads, which is most of them when you look at it. So every road is red except for the entire length of State Street through the Central Business District, which is more than what is shown on this map. The State Street actually extends further east and west, all the way to the extent of the Central Business District.
Hey, just a quick question. That was one of the questions I had. So on 1740 XXX, A, I think you meant A, B, C, D, and E, where you have State Street, and then should D be West State Street to be consistent?
Well,
is that what your intent is, right? To do pretty much all of State Street straight on down to the CBD border, heading to the eastern border? Because it just says to the south, and then it does C again on State Street. And I'm just reading it off.
So I'll just read it down. So on Eastern Street between the railroad and north, railroad to the north and State Street to the south. So Eastern Street runs north-south.
Right.
So from the railroad down to former railroad, really, behind the old True Value down to State Street. So that's basically just a few blocks on that section there by the local 20 and Trinkibitsu and the grocery store and the old True Value. Then the other area is on Murdoch Street between the railroad to the north and State Street to the south. So I used the same bounds to kind of keep it simple. And so Murdoch is going to be, you know, the Janicki building, that's the old Bank of America, down to State Street, which at the corner there is Pro Tech Automotive, and the church that was torn down is now a little
pea garden.
Community garden, yeah. The pea patch is what they call them in Seattle. So does that make sense to everybody? Those two. And then the next one is Puget Street between Ferry to the north and State Street to the south. I didn't want to go all the way to the railroad on Puget Street because that becomes a residential area. There's nothing commercial on it now. But I did include the area that is the old Whidbey Island Bank, the Seroptimist, Howmack. Oh, and then down to Pro, that's the corner with ProTech, excuse me. And then on State Street, so just all of State Street, east or west. And this is under the heading. This is under the heading of the Central Business District. So it only applies to State Street within the Central Business District. When I say on State Street, that goes out from State Route 9 all the way down to the Handy Mart. That's the extent of the Central Business District through there. So that's the big question. Like, does that seem appropriate to go all that distance?
Now, I have a comment on that, because what I realized that, Catherine, when I sent you my map, that I'm a little bit more generous, I think. Okay, you have that residential area on the north side of the street, right, where you have the vacant lot. Actually, Carl Wibbleman owns that lot where that metal shop is. And you just go up a little bit, and then we have another commercial right there on the corner of Rita and West State. So, you know, those folks, because it's only that one portion there, really, from the Handy Mart kind of up until the E&E border. So on my little map, I left that as a place you don't want to put it, but I was just trying to be, you know, thoughtful of any residential properties out there. Anyway, those are just my thoughts. Anybody else?
So I think you might be talking about James Market, not Handy Mart.
That's exactly what I'm talking about. I apologize. Yeah. You're absolutely right.
So the only real residential there is you have those apartments across the street.
Across the street, right. Yeah. And it would actually be from the parking lot of James Market heading eastbound right there where I call it the haunted house, okay, heading to the E&E parking lot. You're right. Right on the opposite side there is, I think, three separate homes. And you're right, they go in a little bit deep there. Anyway.
So I have a couple of thoughts here. Two are just kind of grammatical. I think you're right with the whole A, B, C, D, E. There's two C's there.
Yeah, that's just a typo. No big deal. We'll fix that.
And you know, just make sure that there's a semicolon at the end of the first C. But I can't remember what I had originally stated, but on further thought about Puget, you know, I could see the potential. There's at least six houses within that that block that if you go that stretch could easily be affected by signs and light pollution. And so I was just kind of wanting to throw it out to the planning commission to see if, you know, if anybody else kind of had some reservations regarding Puget Street. And I didn't know if, I guess this would be directed at you, John, that any signs that are currently there, would they just be grandfathered in?
Yeah.
Okay. So, I mean, that makes my question even, like, I would even double down on my concern then. Not that, like, I want to be able to allow those signs that are already grandfathered in, but I don't know if I'd want any additional signs just because there is six, you know, residences right there that could be directly affected. I mean, it's not entirely a commercial street, although it's kind of 50-50.
I agree with Eric. And on my map, I had left Puget only to Pacific. And then between Pacific and Ferry, I didn't have signs because there is four homes right there. So I agreed with him and stopping that at Pacific Street on mine.
So this is the criteria that I was using when developing this. All of State Street is commercial with some residential mixed in. The residential units are actually non-conforming. If they were to burn down or be abandoned for 6 months, they would be, you know, the idea is to get all of that stretch to be commercial. And that's what our zoning code is geared to allow and even require. Murdoch obviously is mostly commercial, and Puget. So maybe I'm thinking about, see, when I think of Puget, there's the Whidbey Island Bank, there's Howmack, there's one residence kind of right across, I'm going down the west side of the street. There's one residence,
right,
and then the pea patch. On the north side, on the east side of the street, there's a house at the corner. There's Sir Optimist. There's a house next to Sir Optimist. And then there's on the south side of Pacific, there's a house. And then
it's all commercial. Yeah.
Then it's all commercial.
Yeah, I'm looking at the bill right now.
So I picked that stretch as green, not saying that I'm married to it, but I picked that stretch as green because that's where the most likely commercial is going to be in the near future.
Yeah.
The most likely I saw is West State all the way through. You know, there's a handful of non-conforming residential properties along that whole stretch, but it's mostly characterized by commercial. West Ferry, there is a handful of houses west of Rita Street, but it's almost all commercial. And that's our, you know, the commercial entry into town. Murdoch, that stretch is mostly commercial also. And that's how I felt about Puget too. So that's why I chose that criteria. And I think it's just worth pointing out that all of the residential in there is non-conforming. You know, that's what the code is trying to make that our commercial core, as we try to encourage a little bit of increased commercial in their downtown area. But, you know, this is the Planning Commission's call. I'm just explaining to you the rationale behind this draft, but we can change it, of course.
You know, when you looked at the northern border for Puget at Ferry, I thought that was a good call because it did keep it out of the primary residential area to the north. And if I look at the lot sizes on the east side of Puget between Ferry and Pacific, yeah, I would agree, looking out 20 years, especially on the corner of Ferry and Puget, that's a decent sized property that's got a lot more economic viability in a different state than it currently is.
I mean, probably my biggest worry with Puget actually is that corner of Ferry and Puget, just because, you know, you have three houses on three other corners of that lot. And if someone was to put in like a Howells style electronic reader board that runs through a whole bunch of flashy messages throughout the day and, you know, late into the night, I could see that being really disturbing upon those three residences. And, you know, part of that nice hometown feel of Woolley is Ferry Street. And so, you know, that's a high value residential area, in my opinion. And I just, you know, I realize that Whidbey Island Bank is probably going to be grandfathered in, but, you know, I do worry about the effect of the light pollution and the nuisance element of these signs upon that specific area. So, you know, that's my biggest worry with the Puget section.
So any display on Puget itself, let's talk about exactly that corner there. So your thought is that on the corner of Puget and Ferry, and I guess the display would only be viable on Puget, not on Ferry, but on Puget. And your thought is if somebody redeveloped that corner lot, the eastern corner, so it would be on the southern border of Ferry, eastern border of Puget, Your concern is that any illuminated signage on that property, looking across the street, and you're right, there's a whole bunch of residences there. That's something we should take into consideration of not allowing it.
So how about I just put it to a vote right now, informal show of hands, just to see where we're at on this. Should we just eliminate Puget from the list of streets that you can have a digital sign on? So now, before I get to the vote, in the CBD, I haven't got to this point of the sign code itself. The way we've written the code for the CBD is you're only allowed to have the reader board portion. You're not allowed to have like a video or images. It would just be scrolling text or text that appears and disappears. And that's the way I wrote it. So no flashing, no fast rolling, but just two colored reader boards. So much like the one at Handy Mart, which is a black background and red scrolling text, that is pretty much, that's the intent of the way I wrote the CBD digital sign regulations.
So just for my own clarification, the reader board sign at Central Elementary, how does that fall into it?
That's too much because it shows like animation. And so, okay. And if the code didn't read this way, then I need to rewrite it. What I intended is only words in the CBD.
I realize that it's just mostly, you know, flashing words, but you know, I have gotten complaints and I've heard complaints about the central sign, and it's, even though it's mostly words and messages, it still has kind of like a a flashing element to it that at night people find a bit of a nuisance. But
so that sign would not be allowed in its current state. It would, okay. You know, the way that I've written for the Central Business District, digital signs is words only.
Okay.
No flashing. There's limits to how fast it can display words. Two color only, background and letters. And that sign has far more capabilities than what this would allow. So if you go down to section C, display standards in the CBD and public zone. All digital signs shall be equipped with an automatic dimming photo cell. So that gets to the dimming the light too. So at night it needs to be dimmer with a maximum of 5,000 nits during the day and 500 at night. And I borrowed that from several jurisdictions. That seems to be a standard that they used, although everybody has something different. Some people have candle output, which is a different measurement. We're going with nits because that seems to be the prevailing standard. And then, you know, even went so far as saying certification of these limits shall be provided by the developer prior to building permit issuance. So they have to verify that they have some sort of limits on it and certification of those limits. And then second, digital signs can only be used after dusk until 11 p.m. So,
I mean, you're easing my fears, because I saw all that, and I it's a little bit in the eye of beholder what exactly that could or couldn't mean. But I mean, if like my worry with the Ferry Street Puget corner would be kind of more along the lines of a sign like, you know, Central Elementary going in there. And so, I mean, if that's going to be off the table, that assuages my fears a bit. So,
okay. Well, yeah, I think then, you know, maybe we, you know, before we make a full decision on where they should be allowed, maybe we should go, I got a little ahead of ourselves here with that discussion, and go, maybe we should continue to go over what the actual regulations for the CBD signage is. So no audio speakers. I put in here language of how you measure the brightness, and I just copied that from other jurisdictions. Digital signs must be directed away from adjacent residentially zoned or open space zoned property, including properties across a public right-of-way. So that says residentially zoned. So that means, you know, say you're down at the eastern end of the CBD, and you're adjacent to the R7 zone. The sign can't be facing the R7 zone, is what that says. It doesn't mean residential properties. It means residentially zoned properties. That doesn't really apply to a lot of them here, because where they allow it, where we're proposing to allow it, is mostly within the bounds of the CBD, not at the edges of the CBD, except for on State Street. And then on the western extent of State Street, it butts up to the industrial zone. So not a residential zone where you need to be worried about it. No electronic message center sign may be located closer than 100 feet from residentially zoned or open space properties. Again, not super helpful since there's not a lot of residentially zoned property adjacent. Digital signs in the CBD and public zones may only contain message board capabilities and display only two colors, a background color and a text color. Messages shall have a minimum of 7 seconds of dwell time. So that's, so when they have words up, it has to be there for 7 seconds. So that's, you know, readable with people walking by or driving by slowly. Flashing, animation, movement, video imaging and fast scrolling messages are prohibited. Changes in message and images must be 1 second or less, and fading and dissolving is not permitted. So when it goes from one, say it says something across there, when it goes to the next one, it has to go pretty quick. It can't dissolve and flash, open a new one. It just kind of goes from one to the next. That's the way these other ones are written. Other jurisdictions have written it. I kind of want to work on that because I think scrolling is probably okay. And we want to, we should discuss that. I mean, as long as it's not fast scrolling, it should be okay.
So I have a question. So looking at the aerial, especially on Puget, we have quite a few existing pylon signs. So we have two situations, right? We have a business that's going to want to keep the existing pylon sign in place and not digitize it, right? Just keep it right there. Joe's Towing. Joe is everywhere, right? There's Joe's Towing, Joe's Restaurant, whatever. So that stays. But now somebody wants to do an additional sign on a digital basis. Can they do both of them? Or are they just limited to the one?
Well, they're limited in the sign code itself to the amount of signage that they're allowed. And that's based on the size of the building.
Right.
Like a pylon sign would be based on how big the square foot of the building is. And then the facade sign is based on how big the actual facade of the building is.
Okay.
So they're bound by the size of their building to say how much signage they actually get. A regular sign and a digital sign.
Can they split the allotment?
Those two added up have to stay within the bounds of what they're allowed.
So I'm sorry, I shouldn't have spoke when you were. So let's say they have X amount of square footage in total signage allowable, and the pylon sign only takes up half of it. So do we have a situation where, okay, use it all, or a portion of it? So can they then split it? Okay, for instance, well, my pylon only takes up X amount of my allotment. So is it an allotment as far as square footage? And then they can then do a secondary digital sign at some other place on the property. And what determines that it's their primary signage, right? So if the facade has another calculation to itself, and we're doing another calculation for the sign, and they want to put that digital sign, let's say in a window or something like that, how are we going to handle that?
Well, we don't regulate signs and windows, first of all. Silas has had his hand up for a while.
Go ahead, I'm sorry. I'm
feeling he has something to contribute right here.
Well, a couple things. First of all, I was really happy with what you came up with, John. The one thing that I saw missing that I liked from the, and this is directly related to what Joe's talking about, that was in that sort of original proposal from the council member, was having the digital reader board side limited to a percentage of the total sign area. And I didn't see anywhere in your regulation, and I could have missed it, that there was any sort of limit to that. And it might help sort of allay Joe's concern here, or at least establish some sort of boundaries about how much of the total sign area can be digitized or reader board or whatever we want to call this stuff. And so other than that, that was on my only concern with this. And I can't remember what the original sort of in that sample legislation, what the percentages were, but it seems like either 25 or 50% would probably be reasonable of total sign area. And that way we don't end up with these giant digitized billboards. You know, it's like the business has to have their sign, which is not digitized. And then they can have some amount of reader board kind of below it, or, you know, in relation to it. So.
Yeah, that's great. Thank you for pointing that out. Like I said, this was a first draft, so I think I may have just inadvertently missed it. So I'm glad that you guys are reviewing for that. In Council Member Kesty's, it read electronic signs may be two color, a background color and a text color. Must be part of a permanent monument sign that can only make up 50% of the area of the sign. Signs can have no animation, moving graphics, flashing, and cannot scroll. They may change once every 6 seconds. No colors, neon colors are prohibited. So that one, I was having trouble with the grammar on that one.
Sure.
But 50% is what it suggested. So maybe I can put, you know, it can be 50% of the total sign, 50% of their total sign allotment.
I wouldn't even say 50. I would say 50% of their total sign, not so much their allotment, but like they have to have at least 50% that's not digitized. Because if they have a total sign allotment of X, they could just make a solely digital sign that's 50% of X, you know, X divided by 2. And you still end up with an only digital sign as opposed to like a business sign that has a digital element to it. And so.
That's a good point, because I started to go down the path of writing something to say that any digital sign needs to have like a regular sign adjacent, like part of it. So for illustration purposes, I'll draw something out here really quick. And so this one that I'm sketching up here, the digital is 50% of the typical sign. I don't know. Oh my gosh, my camera is showing it in reverse, so I can't write.
That's okay. I think we can see it. So I think, John, that you might be able to just say the digital portion of a sign can be up to fit, you know, a digital sign may be up to 50% of total sign area or something like that. Very simply, that means that like, if they, it can only be 50% of whatever sign is there. Right.
If that's what the planning commission wants, I think that's very reasonable.
And then the overall size is still governed by the regulations governing sign size. So like, but whatever sign they put, no matter how it fits within those regulations, only 50% of it can be digital.
Okay, so what I think I'm hearing is, so they get a sign allotment based on their size.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't get to use all of that sign allotment for a digital sign. They only get to use 50% of that sign allotment for a digital sign.
No, that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying that whatever size their sign is, only 50% of it can be digital. So like, say they have a sign allotment of X, they can't just put a digital, you know, even if they're not using all of X, they, you know, the digital part only gets to be half of whatever size sign they install, not whatever size sign they're allotted.
No, there's a very big distinction there, and I understand it. I just want to make sure that I'm getting it down right. So if they build a sign that has digital reader board capabilities, what you're saying is we want to make sure that it also has a typical sign. It's part of a typical sign. They can't just have a digital reader board.
Correct.
Okay.
It can, so it, the digital in the, portion can make up 50% of whatever sign they install.
Mm-hmm. To the max of whatever that calculation is based upon building sign. Right. Hey, here's like a loophole. And, you know, I look at this two ways. And the purpose of a sign is to attract attention to the sign. So we're saying there's only two colors, a background color and a text color. So not flashing, but let's say every 7 seconds, I change the background and the text to something different that always changes to attract attention, where technically they're compliant, where we only have one background color and one text color. How do we kind of put that in here that whatever the background color is, there's a certain timeline that you can change it where it doesn't appear when it's doing a 7 second transfer. It doesn't change text and background, where 7 seconds really isn't a long time, depending on the size of it. Just throwing that out there.
Perhaps put in some wording to just say, specify that it has to be the same two colors on a sign, if that's what.
But you don't want to limit somebody that in the future, because technology being what it is, you know, they're, this is like a sales rep's nightmare, codes like this, because these signs are so much more capable for what they actually do, because everything is software driven, right? And, you know, we're giving limitations, but you're right. Okay, so let's say you have a certain background color, it's black. And then you want to change it maybe from a holiday scheme that at Christmas you want a red background and a gold text presentation. So we wouldn't want to take that ability away from somebody. I guess it's just that during that particular time frame, you just don't want a background, foreground changing every 7 or 10 or whatever seconds. That those are just thoughts, but
that's going to be a tough one to regulate.
Yeah, no, I know. I hear.
Well, you. I think you can just say, you know, background color and text color must remain consistent, or something like that, you know, or signs and display only two colors, a background color and a text color.
We have a 7 second dwell time. So
messages, or maybe you just say background color shall remain consistent or something, you know, or, you know, I don't know. Or
fixed.
Or we say no background color and you can only use words can only be colored. Has to be a black background.
I don't mind that actually, because that limits the amount of light that the thing's putting off. I mean, I know like central sign, for instance, is a black background. It still is projecting plenty of light, but if it was a white background with some sort of bright text on it, it would be even more garish, you know? And so, I think that signs must be black in background with a limit of one text color might just solve that. And if you just say one text color and then it, they're trying to switch it, you can say, no, that's two text colors, you know, like, I don't know. I don't think it'll be, you know, and I don't mind if they change it from day to day or seasonally or something, if they want to do blue one day and red the other day or whatever, that's.
and why not, if it's just letters, what would be wrong with it if it's like it's up with the red letters right now and it changes and it goes to blue letters. It's not, you know, without the background lit.
I don't care.
That I don't know that it's going to be that much of a visual distraction, but we can just say the only, your digital board, it's a reader board. You get one color text in black background, done. Or we could say you get one color. Yeah. Yeah.
So here's, because I've seen it done before. So look at a font size, right? So if I can change my text color every 7 seconds, the way it's written now, by the way, this is a good job. And all of a sudden I pump that font, okay, to say, hey, whatever, that literally blows up the screen in white and then changes to something else later on. I think the whole premise.
Well, that wouldn't be allowed.
Wait, say that again. I'm sorry.
That would be some sort of, that would be an animation feature. That wouldn't be allowed.
Why would that be an animation feature changing?
If you've got the letters going from this to growing, that's animation.
No. That I get. I'm just talking changing the font size on the redisplay every 7 seconds. Right. If we're saying every second's a dwell time for all displays, then I go from depending on the size of the font. Let's just look at stuff that we do regular memos with. If I go from an 8-point font to a 27-point font, right? If I'm doing a binder cover or something like that, that's not going to limit it on a black background by changing a font size, neither even a font type. That although it's not an animation, kind of serves as the same thing to get somebody's attention to it, especially if I can go to a brighter color, still within the compliance of what we're putting here. And I'm just being the fly in the ointment here to just say, let's try and do the best we can to plug loopholes, because people are very ingenious, especially when it comes to something like this, that somebody's going to figure it out to say, okay, I'm still compliant, but you know, I'm going to get what I want to get out of it at some point.
So I hate to say it, but Joe's absolutely right. Some business owner who's going to want to just just to be annoying, or because they think that it's going to be better, they're always going to look for some sort of loophole and be clever. And that's the American way, I suppose, but it's really tough for planners when we're trying to write rules.
Everybody's still going to be like bound by this 5,000 nits though, which I assume is like a total, like overall amount of light that's being blasted out by this thing.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you have any way to like check compliance with that, but ultimately I think the issue would be at nighttime, right? Because nobody cares during the day if the text is bigger or smaller or what, you know. I don't see that as a giant issue as long as it's, you know, within the number of nits. And I think the 500 at night is going to be the like main one that once this goes into effect that people are going to be worried about. And so that's just my two cents on that issue. I think that the font size should be up to the person with the sign, and you know.
Yeah, I think Silas's point is well taken. I think requiring just a black background eliminates a lot of the light pollution nuisance element of it. And, you know, it really is, you know, more of a factor at nighttime than during the daytime. You know, as far as font size and even multiple font colors, like I'm okay for allowing a bit of creativity too. I don't want to totally stifle people's creativity and trying to attract business, but just try to keep, you know, the overall impact on local residences or even drivers, it being a bit distracting, to a minimum. So that's kind of where I fall.
I agree. The black background, I think, would really help limit a lot of those problems with really in your face, even with the second delays and whatever, you know, with the changes. But I can see why people would want to at least have the liberty of doing multiple font colors, because, you know, like sale, you know, when there's a sale going on, it's nice to be able to put that in red or some contrasting color to the normal, you know, whatever they have on that sign. So if we took that away, I mean, as for font height, you know, we could just say standard, you know, has to be consistent. But then again, that also reduces the what they can do. So
you guys are talking font color, one color that can change, but not different letters have different colors. So we're going to be consistent where the text is one color, which can change, but it's not multiple colors within the same word, like sale, S red, A white, L green, E whatever. So we're just talking one, right?
Yeah, I think we leave it like it's written, where it just, well, change it to black, must have a black background and one font color. And then if somebody wants to try to push the boundaries and change the font color from flash to flash, but as long as there's one consistent font color at a time, I think that's probably a good baseline.
How does the rest of the Planning Commission feel about that train of thought?
Sounds good to me.
I'm fine with it.
I mean, I'm fine with it. I would still allow for, you know, a couple different colors within the same message, but I'm fine with using that as a baseline.
Stacy?
I'm okay with a couple of different colors on the text. I agree with a solid one colored back, like the black, but I'm okay with a couple of different colors in text. I don't see a problem with that.
So does anybody have a problem with the being written black background in one text color?
Whatever.
Sounds good.
John, here's
just move along.
This is just a procedural question. On that same section C on one, I think you want to say certification of these limits to be provided by the owner prior to the sign permit issuance. Are we going to do a different permit for the digital readers? Because it might not be a new building, right? It's just going to be whoever's installing the new digital sign. Right.
Well, yeah. So whoever applies for the sign, they'll have to submit the certification, whether it's owner or owner rep.
Yeah, I'm just looking at the language you have here. You have by the developer. We're on the same thing. That's fine.
That permittee. So the other thing, well, in this vein is, I don't have a firm grasp on whether or not scrolling is allowed. Is the Planning Commission okay with scrolling as long as it's not fast? Like Handy Marts, I believe, scrolls. All right. So not a strong.
I'm okay with not scrolling. Like, I think that how you have it just as only static letters and just keeping it at that, because the difference between scrolling and animation and blurring in and out, which you've per, you know, or what, I don't remember what the exact, you know, the fade in and out and all that stuff. I think that line gets really blurry. And so I'm perfectly okay with saying static images that or static text that changes from one static text to the next static text. And because how do you say what's the difference between scrolling and animate, you know, scrolling is inherently a form of animation, in my opinion. I don't, maybe that's misguided, but I think that like I liked how that was written, where it's just like straight up no moving business.
Yeah, you know, and that goes to the premise of it, to the beginning, what the intent is, and does not create a distraction. Anything that moves is going to be distracting, right? Because that's where your eyes go to when you, just human nature, when you see something moving, your eyes are going to go to it. So if the premise here and the intent is to not create a distraction, yeah, static with a 7-second refresh probably accomplishes that goal.
Okay. I will eliminate the fast scrolling from here because that implies that scrolling of any slow nature is allowed. So no scrolling. So that was the CBD regulations in a nutshell. The section ahead of that was the regulations for the rest of town. So these are more liberal. They don't have the same amount of restrictions on what a sign can do. These only apply in the mixed commercial and an industrial zone. We're saying no digital signs in any of the residential zones and none in the open space zone, which is parks, so there shouldn't be one there. And then the CBD in the public zone is what we just reviewed. So that only leaves the only last two zoning designations are the mixed commercial and industrial. Now there's also the overlays and those are overlaid the mixed commercial or industrial zones, so we won't need to worry about those right now unless the Planning Commission has concerns about the overlays, such as the UVMU. So these are all the same standards up through number 7. And no, they're a little different, so I'll read through them. But it's the same 500 max nits during the day and 5,000 during the day and 500 at night. They may be used after dusk only until 11 p.m. and for up to 4 hours after an event. Or 1 hour after an event, sorry. The measurement of brightness is still measured from the sign's face. Audio speakers are still prohibited. And then this is where it gets a little different. Digital signs must be directed away from the adjacent residentially zoned or open space zoned properties, including properties across the public right-of-way. No electric message center sign may be located closer than 100 feet from a residentially zoned or open space property. So now, you know, that sounds familiar to what we said in the central business district, but now it really will apply because the mixed commercial zone will butt up to residential zones all over the place. So this is saying you can't have a sign within 100 feet of a residentially zoned property.
Hey John, can I ask a quick question about that?
Yeah.
I feel like there's a lot of like Highway 20, where there might be a lot of, where only, I think in my mind, I'm not looking at the zoning map, but that like the businesses facing Highway 20 are mixed commercial, and then maybe like immediately behind them, those lots are residential. And so I'm just wondering if that would like prohibit all those businesses from having a sign that faces Highway 20 if their lots like not 100 feet deep or 120 feet deep, that they would need to like meet whatever setbacks.
100 feet's not much, so that shouldn't really affect them, but I'll look into it.
Because I think that just to go with this a little bit, I think that a lot of what the intent is that it's not facing the residential zone, right? Or it's not like the light's not impacting the residential zone, but like even if it's 100 feet from the residential zone, but the sign's facing out at Highway 20, that might accomplish the intent. So anyway, but yeah, it might be good to just check that, because I don't know.
You know, and there is quite a bit of residential on Highway 20.
What it more might affect is, you know, say a property, there's, I think it's on Central Street, there's a commercial building with residential above. But it's actually like one lot off of Moore Street, but it's the last lot before a residential zone. So that property wouldn't be allowed to have an electronic reader board because they're adjacent to a residential lot.
Just a quick question here. I know that we're not dealing with enforcement here, but how practical is it to have a cutoff of 11 p.m.? I mean, even the dimming part, the dimming's, I think, a good thing, but with business owners, I can see some places doing that, but I guess, you know, enforcing and everybody turning their lights off at 11 at the latest seems somewhat difficult.
We also have a situation in the mixed commercial zone where some of these businesses might be open 24 hours and their reader boards may well be relevant throughout the night. I mean, even if it's a gas station or a whatever restaurant or something, I don't know. I think that, I guess my personal view on this in the mixed commercial zone is that we keep the brightness reduction. So enforcing the, like bring it down to 500 nits at night, but maybe let them keep them on all night if they want to, because in theory, they're not facing residential zones. They're not, impacting residential areas in the same. And they're not, impacting the sort of the charm of downtown quite as much.
You know, here's an example of what's going in right now. So right on Cook and Trail, you have a new gas station going in next to the physical therapy place. And on Trail, you have all those brand new single family residences that are going to be right there. So now because I've been in those homes. So now your bedroom is now going to be facing into this new gas station that there's a good possibility it'll be going 24 hours a day. So how are you going to feel about something lit up? okay, literally out your back door. So we are going to have situations like that where you're going to have residences where the transition between the residential area and the mixed commercial or whatever is definitely going to have an impact on your quiet enjoyment of your home. So I'm just throwing it out.
Joe, there is the requirement that says digital signs must be directed away from adjacent residentially zoned properties.
I'm just throwing things out there. You're right. But at some particular point, we're going to have a situation where it's just not, you know, it's going to be kind of in between kind of things. So I think the original thing was back to having things turn off at 11 o'clock at night. You know, and what Silas brought up, what if you have a business that's going to be open 24 hours a day, whereby, okay, so you might dim it, but anyway.
Well, with the gas station, the electronic reader board is the least of your worries in the middle of the night. I mean, those places are lit up like a whatever. I don't know. They're very bright. So, are we making this easier on you, John?
No.
Hey, all information is good. Well, and in this case, you know, I'm not hearing any directive from the Planning Commission. I'm hearing a very good discussion, but unless somebody recommends that we change the way it's written, I have no choice but to really to bring it back the way it is. So you need to tell me if you want it changed.
Okay. I think in the mixed commercial and industrial zone, we don't need to shut it off at 11 o'clock. There.
I'll agree.
I agree with that. I think that allowing 24-hour signage in the mixed commercial zone is appropriate.
I'd back that.
Okay. Yep. Industrial zone, should we, I wrote it to allow digital signs in the industrial zone. Does anybody have any problems with that, or is it, it's industrial.
I don't think that most industrial operations are going to have any interest in a digital sign, but if they do, it's kind of the same in my mind.
So now, all
right. Sorry.
Now this differs from the CBD in the sense that the wording for scrolling messages is there. Do we want to allow scrolling messages in?
I think it's like you say 5 second dwell time, and I'm not as opposed to scrolling messages in the mixed commercial, but how do you differentiate a 5 second dwell time from a scrolling message, or and where's the cutoff between fast scrolling and slow scrolling, you know, or like what? I think that's just problematic as far as how it's interpreted. And I don't have a really good suggestion for how to fix it, unless you want to just eliminate scrolling messages and say 5 second dwell time so they can be a little bit faster.
Well, you know, there is a way. I agree with you 100%, and I really got bogged down on that issue, and then I just decided to send it to you guys and see what you thought. I think I've seen examples of how to regulate scrolling. You know, they say like, you know, moving by at such a rate or something like, you know, I think there is a way to regulate scrolling, but yes, it's total conflict with the 5 second dwell time.
And so you could say 5 second dwell time or scrolling at such and such a rate is permitted, or it's 5 second dwell time for static images and scrolling at, you know, whatever the rate is, is permitted and just leave it at that, you know, excluding all this other stuff, flashing, strobing, video imaging.
Could say 5 second dwell or scroll.
I'm going to look to see if there's some standards on how fast scrolling goes.
You know, this is one of the disadvantages of Zoom meetings, because this would be one of these places, since signs are so important to businesses, to have somebody from the industry come in, that they already have all this stuff set up because this is what they sell. To actually have somebody come in and set something up for us, and this is what this looks like, and it's kind of hands-on, that allows you to make a more informed decision. I mean, what I'm going to do after this is actually start YouTubing it and start taking a look at what we have here to see what, you know, it really does look like. Signs are powerful things, and, you know, what we were discussing earlier, it's the human ingenuity that will try and take advantage and find loopholes in something that might not accomplish what we're trying to accomplish here. And I guess back to the original thoughts of things and the intent to keep distractions at a minimum. So.
Well, should I invite the local sign company to speak on this?
I think it would be really helpful, right? They sell it every single day. I mean, they'll be able to tell us what features are coming out that we haven't even considered.
That would really help.
Of course, they may be a little bit biased on what should and shouldn't be allowed.
Well, that they wouldn't be there for that. Just let's see what you have. And, I mean, it would help us, I think, make a better informed decision, right, to see what these things can even do.
Yeah, well, it's in their interest in not give us any alarm or cause to try to regulate further. So,
yeah, but they wouldn't know what our intention is. I think we can do it in a manner where they get to show what these products can actually do. That you know, I'm sure, you know, for a lot of these people, they would agree that some of this stuff is intrusive. I mean, all the comments that you're seeing, not just from this particular commission, but from other members of the signage on I-5 right now that are basically on tribal lands, that they are distracting. It started down towards Federal Way, I want to say about 5-6 years ago, when the Puyallup tribe put up that one big animated reader board, basically before you were heading into Tacoma. Now they're all over the place, from Marysville.
That was like 20 right years ago, Joe.
How long ago was it?
Like probably 20 years ago.
It might be. Now, it might be closer to 30.
Yeah.
Wow. I'm getting,
yeah, you're talking about the sign on the Fife.
Yeah, exactly.
That was the first one.
Downgrade into Fife. And it caused everybody in Seattle complained about that sign, and it caused traffic problems.
That's the one I'm talking about. But you're seeing them more all over the place, really. 20 years ago.
At least, yeah. Every bit of it.
A question that I would have is, would it be helpful, or would it overcomplicate knowing all these different features of what signs can do? Because part of signs is creativity. And, you know, there's probably, especially with modern technology, numerous ways, maybe even infinite ways, that things could be done and displayed and whatnot. And I think what we're after is trying to keep things to a minimum, to allow a bit of creativity, but not be a nuisance. I don't know exactly how helpful I would find that to be.
If I can jump in here, I feel like we're pretty close on what we feel like we want to allow. And in my opinion, if we want to contact the sign company, it would be most useful to very like narrowly ask them. We're trying to figure out scrolling speeds. We don't want fast scrolling speeds. Like, how should we define this? Or like, you know, how, like if somebody comes to you and wants to set up a scroll, you know, like just narrow, like ask them that question, like about the scrolling speeds and how to quantify that little piece of it. Because other than that, I feel like we have a pretty good handle on what all's going on, and we don't want them. I just don't think they need to weigh in too much on the rest of it.
My suggestion was just to even see what's out there. And for instance, and I brought this up the last time as I'm looking through this first cut at it, which is really good, by the way. I like words like shall be limited to. So if we're trying to control features, that shall be limited to is pretty darn specific. Like I can easily see how we could put it, shall be limited to two colors, background fixed to black, just a little bit tighter as to the fact that it's not going to exceed what the base requirements are going to be. So those are just some thoughts. The specificity, I think, when you do a code is.
So I'm going to forego inviting a, based on what I'm hearing, I'm going to forego inviting a local sign company, but I will call after looking at codes from other cities. If I can't find any way to regulate scrolling, you know, put some code on it saying, you know, at whatever rate, I think there are standards out there. If I can't find out something that's good, or if I need clarification, I'll call and get some information from a sign company and see what how they can help with that. But it just seems like we're close enough in the that we don't necessarily need the local sign companies to come, and they may not want to come because, you know, their time is spent to try to sell these things, not necessarily just give a talk on their free night when they could be at home watching a basketball game or something. Unless I feel strong vibes the other direction, that's what I'm proposing, I guess.
That's fine with me.
Yep.
I agree with that.
I'd also like to be sure that our brightnesses are correct.
Okay.
Can we go back to the map?
Yes, good point.
So that section on that intersection between Rita and West Woodworth, specifically the Rita north corner and the Woodworth north corner and the Rita East corner, that's all pretty industrial right now. There's no, I don't believe there's any residential properties in that section.
Rita's mostly residential on the west side.
I think I said the east side. And that's on the Woodworth border, right?
Yeah, but that's like a dead end to the alley. It's an industrial building and a residential, so there's no through traffic. That didn't seem like a reasonable place to even want to. So that's why I left those out.
And what were the thoughts on Woodworth, where the local 20 tap room is and you have Jadicky, what do you call it, HR there? I get the Metcalf, the historical buildings. And again, I'm thinking on behalf of what potentially some business owners might want, where we eliminated all of Woodworth, where all you really have is the post office that might like an electronic reader sign at some point, and directly across the street. You have that alleyway that splits the Metcalf frontage buildings from their back end. And then from that alleyway to the west, I thought that would have been an okay area for people that might want to do something tasteful.
My recollection is we had a pretty good discussion last planning commission meeting, and those roads going off a block from Metcalf were Woodworth and Ferry. The planning commission didn't feel that that was accurate, that that's a good place, but State Street would be okay.
That was my recollection, that kind of like, if you're walking down Metcalf and historical downtown, when you get to Woodworth, you want to look right and left and not be like bombarded by sign, you know, digital reader board signs.
It's pretty far down though. I mean, that's a big building on the corner where the dentist's office is on Metcalf. By the time you, and then those small buildings where Janicki, HR is like, you're right, I don't see anybody even wanting to do it. But the local 20, they might want to do something. The post office might want to do something. And if we have definitions that are tight that allow people to do things without being distractive and things, I'm just throwing it out there. Whatever people decide, I mean, that's fine.
If the local 20 wanted a sign, they can put one right here on their corner of Eastern. That'd work.
Yeah, that's how I was reading the sign, is they could put it off to the, the corner. I don't think there's anything that, because we show green on Eastern Street.
Yep.
So.
We never really did finish Puget. So now that we understand what the signs look like in the CBD, it seemed like we were leaning towards removing signs from being allowed on Puget Street in between State and Ferry. So that's where I think we left it. So I was leaning towards redoing the map and the code to not allow signs on Puget either. Is that where the Planning Commission wants to go with that?
Puget would be fine to Pacific, in my opinion, just throwing it out there.
Which south of Pacific?
Between State and Pacific.
State and Pacific, it would be okay, in my opinion. But not from Pacific to Ferry.
So unless the Planning Commission has any more they'd like to talk about on this topic, I think I've got everything I need to get you a draft review for next week and probably a public hearing. All right.
Would anybody like to add anything else into this discussion? I think John's got quite a bit to look at prior to the next meeting. Do we want to do another meeting, or you want to go straight to a public hearing, which I'm fine with myself, on the next meeting? Thoughts?
I think a public hearing is fine. I don't think John has too much really to change on this. It's pretty close.
All right, well, sounds good. Should we move on to next agenda item, which is just Planning Commission information stuff?
Hey, here's one question. And I don't remember that we had the Joint Council Planning Commission meeting and a bunch of people weren't there. And I don't remember that we even went over that at the February meeting. I just happened to pull it up on the city website myself. So I think, Joe, you weren't there.
Wasn't there.
You weren't there? No, I know. It was just Danielle and Eric. So anyway, I'm just throwing that out there.
So that was, you know, as far as planning commission information items, that's one of the things I was going to mention. So first, back, you know, after our last meeting, we were in February.
Mm-hmm.
The city council was still reviewing the downtown parking regulations. Those did pass as the planning commission wrote them. So those passed on the 24th and were probably going to affect this week or maybe last week. So thank you for your work there. And then we had the March 3rd, I think it was, joint planning commission city council meeting where we talked about a couple of things. One is the 2021 docket. And was there anything else that the council wanted to add to the docket? And we discussed several items, but nothing made it to the docket. So when the Planning Commission starts working on the 2021 docket, the only things that we're going to be reviewing is two rezones. So might be able to bring that to you in April. We'll see how this month goes. I'll give you a little report on what's going on in the planning department here in a moment. Also at that meeting, the council talked about the design standards in the Central Business District. So I think we talked about it at the last planning commission meeting. If we already did, I apologize, but I'll go over it again. So they're very concerned about changing of historic buildings, particularly at the roll-up doors at the bullpen. The council was very displeased with that and was concerned about our design standards. And so the Planning Commission is going to take up design standards review for the Central Business District starting probably in April. Again, depending on how our schedule works out here. But one of those things will be coming to you, either that or the docket. And if you want, we can make their discussion available on the internet to listen to the minutes, because they're concerned about protecting the historic downtown feel. And so that's what we'll be reviewing for, to make sure that our codes are clear enough. So that's all I got on that. We'll talk about it ad nauseum in when we get to that. And then, you've probably noticed the planning department's been extraordinarily busy. We received two applications for projects in the UVMU. And we're getting ready to get that information out to the public, the notice of applications for that. One of them was the Janicki building, which there was actually notice for that a while ago, which it's at the corner of Hodgen and Stendel on the southeast corner. And that's proposed to be a 5-story building with 76 units and commercial on the main floor and the parking that goes along with it. So that'll be a big project to really put our design standards to the test. Quick look at what they've drawn, building looks good. But there's lots of details to review, and Catherine will be managing that. And then BYK submitted an application for the corner of Trail and Stendel, the old Meamber property. There's one house there and kind of just some trees in the back. And that would be a 3-story, I believe. Catherine, 3-story?
Are you talking about, BYK or? Yeah. Yes.
So it's a 3-story with commercial on the main floor and I believe parking underneath. Mm-hmm. Not below, like underground, but on the main floor. And that would be 67 units with commercial on the main floor. So they both applicants reviewed our design standards, and you know they fully intend to meet them. So we'll see how that turns out. And then of course we're reviewing the planet, like I said, with the docket this year, we're going to be reviewing a rezone for the Bob Ruby at the golf course. We're going to take that up again because the council wanted the planning commission to re-review it. In the meantime, he's actually applied for a residential development on the rest of the golf course, not including those 3 acres. And that would be about 97 units total. I think it's 92 lots, and 90, a couple of them are duplex lots. And so notice for that is going to be going out to the public very soon. And we're fully anticipating that the public will have a lot of comments about that proposal. And the other docket item is the rezone of some of the Butco property, which is just behind Cook Road on the north side. They have 5 acres of mixed commercial property that they're requesting to change the zoning to a residential 15. So we'll go over the details of that when we get there, but just thought I'd give you a heads up on the things that we're doing. So we've got lots of subdivisions going on in under review in our department. You've seen that the McGarrigal one is under construction, and they've started to build some model homes and a clubhouse. You can see on Garden of Eden Road, on FNS Grade Road, where Garden of Eden would come down through there, is under construction, and they're getting close to paving and being ready to build houses out there too. So there's lots going on in our department. Apologize, we've been super busy. And if you want to make sure that we're also supporting the Planning Commission the best that we can. And that's all I've got.
Anybody else? Do I hear a motion to adjourn? Somebody must want to go home. Well, you're already
so out. Moved.
Okay, we have a motion to adjourn from Commissioner Maddox. Do I have a second?
I second it. Okay.
We have a second from Commissioner Fournette. The meeting is adjourned at 8:09 p.m. and I look forward to seeing everybody next month, if not sooner. Have a great night. John, Catherine, thank you very much. We'll talk to you.